Blog Talk Radio.
Consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Hey everybody, this is Kasim Sultan, a very, very famous bass player, and you are listening to Hard Rock and Sports with Tommy Florio and Jeff Talinsky.
I'm not really sure this was such a great idea. I mean, I don't feel any better than I did at the hotel.
He was going to do a TV special from here before he died.
Yeah, that's right, a musical version of Somebody Up There Likes Me. Well, since my baby left me, I've found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that Heartbreak Hotel.
Do it with the harmony parts.
Right. Well, since my baby...
The same key, though, I think.
Well, since my baby left me...
If I'm going...
Since my baby left me.
No, you can't hit that note.
Since my baby left me. Well, I found a new place to dwell.
That's alright.
It sounds raga. You don't want to go raga.
No, not with this, it don't.
It does.
Well, since my baby left me.
It's kind of cracking barbershop.
Well, hey.
Barbershop raga.
Watch the language.
It's a new hybrid.
King.
Oh, this is terribly depressing.
It really puts perspective on things, though, doesn't it?
Not too much. There's too much fucking perspective now. 19...
Howard, the way we work here at NBC is a more professional manner than you're probably used to. Now, see, I don't care about what you did down in Washington, because that's chicken shit radio. Here at NBC, this is real radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8,
the clock is
7,
operating. We're underway.
Tranquility Base here.
Endeavor, go as runway.
Now, for the thousands in attendance, and the millions watching around the world on HBO pay-per-view. Ladies and gentlemen, from Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, let's get ready to rumble!
You are currently listening to a live broadcast of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show on Blog Talk Radio. When this episode of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show is complete, you can find it and all past episodes of our show on Spotify by going to Spotify.com, finding the podcast section, and searching for Hard Rockin' Sports. Episode and all episodes of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show are sponsored by Joseph J. Giacio, the official realtor of the Hard Rockin' Sports Show. Well, guys, let's say you're out there looking to buy or sell your home. Or maybe it's time to get out of mom and dad's house and you are looking to rent your very, very first place. Well, this is all pretty scary stuff. And maybe you need some expert help. Well, say no more. Jeff and I suggest you reach out to one of the nicest people we know, someone who will listen to your needs and wants and help you in your quest. Well, that person is none other than Staten Island realtor Jay Giacio. Jay, a fixture in the Staten Island realtor community for many years, will know how to help you and make this often painful experience a lot easier. We are extremely happy to have Jay as one of our sponsors, and to find out more about Jay or to find ways to contact him, please go to josephgiacio.agentsquared.com. You can also stop by the Hot Rocket Sports page and find a link to Jay's website on our homepage. Please support the people who support our show.
With the players.
Come on, live direct from Hell's Final Pass.
But hey, enough of my yakking. What do you say? Let's boogie.
And that would be my cue to start the show. Welcome live from high atop Monroe. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I will start over again. Hi, guys. Welcome to Thursday night and live from high atop Hard Rocket Sports Studios in beautiful scenic Monroe, New Jersey. We are Hard Rocket Sports. It's your three-hour weekly get-together with us where we will bring you all of the biggest news from around the world of hard rock, heavy metal, and, of course, the wide world of sports. And, guys, if you haven't figured it out in the first 30 seconds, I am exhausted. It's been a long week. My daytime activities are starting to affect my nighttime activities, meaning this show. Now, but compounded this week, guys, is the fact that we went to the Kiss concert last night. My good friend and co-host, Jeff Tonwinski, myself, Mike Passamonte from Pastor Mike, with Mike Passamonte and Carl Graham, and our good friend Paul Gill, last week's guest on The Bottom Line. Man, everything's show-related, all intertwined. And we went to the Kiss concert at Madison Square Garden last night. I had a blast. And I tell you the truth, if it wasn't for that, I probably would have canceled tonight's show. By the time I got home, got into bed, I think I looked up the last, and it was 1:15. The alarm went off at 4:15. And I angrily went to work this morning. But that's what you do when you're me. You don't take days off. You don't skip school. Although I did skip school to go see Spinal Tap. But that was a long time ago. I think the statute of limitations are over on that, by the way. I don't think I can get in trouble for that anymore. Twice. I believe, I don't know if we cut out of school twice to go see it or just once. I did see it twice in the theaters. I believe we cut out of school. But guys, we got a good show tip for you tonight. We're not gonna be on for very long. It's gonna be a little bit of an abbreviated show. We'll do a little bit on Kiss. We'll do some stuff on the NFL and some of the new rule changes. I think that's very interesting. We're gonna talk about the dirt. I think some semi important movie that has been made. Pretty good about Motley Crue. So we got all of that. We got some baseball. So we'll do about an hour, yeah, give or take, have a little fun, and we'll be back next week full of piss and vinegar, as they say. I don't know why being full of piss and vinegar means you're all hyper. It's one of those wives' tale things, or one of those I don't know. But guys, we can't get the show started without getting my co-host on and talking a little, getting him in. And so let's get Jeff Tonwinski. What's up, Hefe?
What's going on, man? You sound pretty tired.
Yeah, I'm beat, my friend. It was one of those days when you do go to work, you want to go find a corner and hide and just, you know, sit at my desk and write some emails. And I was up and down the building all day, climbing ladders, arguing with people. So I did not rest. I got home later than usual and started to get the show started a little later. So let's hope over the weekend I can catch up with some sleep. But, Jeff, I thought it was important. I was hoping you had some energy left for us to kind of get on and talk about what NFL rule changes. I think that's huge tonight. And, of course, the Kiss concert.
I'm ready to go, man. Unfortunately, I went to bed around the same time you did last night. I got up slightly later than you did. I didn't have to go to work. But I forgot to shut my alarm off. So I've been up since 4:45, stayed up most of the day.
Yeah. So, all right, listen, let's get an hour or so and see how we feel, and then we'll at least start our due diligence. But listen, I got to ask you like I always do. Jeff, how was your week?
Well, it was a long week for me, too, but it just felt longer than what it was. But overall, not bad. I had a lot of fun last night, ate some good food,
yeah.
If you could call that food good.
So but you know what?
For you. But
no, but
bad.
You know what? I have to tell you, that was a blast. Just sitting around the table in the restaurant, the four of us talking. I mean, think about it. What did we talk about? Honestly, not an ounce of politics creeped in. Not an ounce of work or anything. You know, really, you know, substantial. We talked baseball, football, Motley Crue, Queen. I mean, I don't think. And it was never a lapse in the conversation.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jeff.
I thought I lost you. Yeah, no. It was good. I know that we kind of paired off for a little bit. And you and Mike were talking your stuff. And me and Paul were talking some other stuff, base equipment. And you and Mike were talking. And then we jumped in the conversation. But, you know, it was a real cool time last night, man. Everybody had fun. It was the first time, I believe, that Mike and Paul met, and only the second time that I got to meet Mike. And we had fun, man. It was a lot of fun. Everybody enjoyed the concert, which was important. That was cool. I was surprised. And I'll tell you the truth, the food at Hooters was better than I thought.
Yeah.
So that made life easier.
Yeah.
And none of you tried to escape while we were at the concert. That was a plus.
Yes, it was. Yes, that is always a plus. But it was really a good time. But
you always got to worry when you're going out to a place like that, that something inopportune is going to happen when you're like halfway through it, and that you're not going to be able to take this home with you. And last night was a prime example of one of those places, and it worked out well for everybody involved.
I would agree. And so you were saying is you don't buy the food, you rent it?
The what?
I said you're not even sure if you're buying the food. Well, you might just be renting it.
Well, listen, we're always renting food. You know that. It don't stay very long. But this turned out to be a longer-term rental than I had envisioned it.
Yeah, listen, it was a good choice. The TVs were up. It was loud. We were able to talk loud. It was a blast. And you know what? To me, I got to tell you, I enjoyed the whole night. But that was my favorite part. The four of us sitting there, not arguing, but kind of doing what we do on the show with four of us talking different ideas on the bands and the music and everything else. And I thought that was a blast. I could have stayed there for hours. We should have, considering we sat through Garibaldi, we should have stayed there till 8:30 and got to our seats at 8:45. We'd have been better off.
Well, listen, in hindsight, what are you going to do? We got to see the great Garibaldi or whatever his name was. And you know what? It was a lot of fun just goofing on what he was doing.
Yes.
And the aspect of how much Gene was charging him for art supplies.
That's fun. Yeah, it was a blast. It really was a blast, and it was fun. And now we'll get to the review. We got a lot of talk. We had a little bit to talk about. We're going to talk about that. I want to bring up the dirt. I know Jeff didn't see it, but I did, and I want to tell you why I think it's an important movie that was made. Not the best movie I ever saw, but I think it's an important movie. And
no,
I got
to ask the makers of the dirt. Do they have any affiliation with a Hard Rock and Sports Show or RFL Records or or anything?
Nope.
No, so there'll be no check involved with this one. This is coming
no
straight
check
from
involved.
The heart.
Again, I'll tell you, it was not the best movie I ever saw. It was not as good as Bohemian Rhapsody. Not even close. Okay? The only thing I thought was I couldn't pick out any spots where you went, hey, that never happened, or you know that didn't happen there. Like it was, I found it to be pretty accurate. So for me, that was good. The acting was terrible. And the one, again, I'll get to more. The one that I really liked was it got into something on all the band members. It didn't, you know, you didn't get their whole history, but you got a little something more than you did with Bohemian. So we'll get into that next. I definitely want to get to the NFL. I think the NFL is really, you know, I'm torn on this interference penalty replay challenge. I'm torn for two reasons. We'll get to that. Yankees win, Mets win. Typical Mets. I mean, they played Scherzer, so I can understand them not hitting a lot, but they did win. DeGrom pitched a great game. So good day in New York baseball opening day. And we got a lot to get to along the way. So you know, before we do, let's get my dad in. Let's see what he wants to talk about, and then we'll get to our stuff. What's up, Pop?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
How you doing, Mr. Florio?
I'm good. Tell me, you should get some rest. You sound really bad. You need a good night's sleep.
I do
so
need a
take
good
it easy
night.
Over the weekend. But no, I was, you know, I was watching the Yankee game. I mean, they look good, but you can't, you know, go by what they were playing against. But still, you're supposed to beat these teams.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one of those, if damned if you do and damned if you don't. They have to beat these teams.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I thought it was a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Andujar got an error, which I didn't think he should have got. I thought it should have been a Bird, because Bird was more interested on staying on the base than
mm-hmm.
he was. But you know what I was thinking? I didn't realize it that Harold Baines was elected to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Are they kidding me?
Yeah, there's a committee.
Committee. Yeah, but most of those guys, most of them are Chicago.
Well,
right?
It's not the Veterans Committee. It's a different kind of committee. They only meet every couple of years. But two of the big guys on that committee are Tony La Russa and
right.
Jerry Reinsdorf, who was the owner of the White Sox and the manager of the White Sox while Baines was there. And,
I'm trying to understand the guys that aren't in the Hall of Fame. I
mm-hmm.
mean, Keith Hernandez. I mean, no, I have no love laws for him. But I think he was a little better than Baines, Don Mattingly.
Yeah, when it got announced a couple months back, we were going back and forth. I mean, there were guys like Dave Parker, Don Mattingly, Gilberto Hernandez. Even guys, you could take it to guys like Jeff Kent. There were other guys that were really good players who were probably a little short of being Hall of Famers that were far and away better players than Harold Baines. And we said that was it. That once Harold Baines got in, it's no offense to Harold Baines. He was a professional baseball player, a good hitter. But one thing where you go, oh, Harold Baines is a great player. It wasn't like he played his whole career. He didn't have 3,000 hits. He didn't have 300 homers. There's not one thing when you go through his stats where you go, that guy's a Hall of Famer. And
I don't know why they have these committees. Why do you have the writers and everybody – and then you have a committee that oversees it. I mean, if the writers don't put you in, you shouldn't be in.
you're preaching to the choir, Pops. You're preaching to the choir.
I just wanted to say what I said. About the rules now.
Yeah, go ahead.
I heard something about them. And the one that I didn't like was the interference.
Okay.
Because it's going to be up to somebody in the booth to call it, or is it somebody on the field?
No, it's going to be, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, Dad, it's going to be the same thing. So essentially during the game, there's a bunch of things you can review, obviously. Fumbles, interceptions, you know, there's certain things that are automatic, certain things the coaches can do. You get three a game. Well, you get two a game. If you get both right, you get a third. So they just add another category. So they're saying you can now check for defensive pass interference, offensive pass interference, or non-calls. So if nothing else, if there was a pass play. So, Jeff, here's what I love about it. I think you should be able to review anything on a football field at any point in the game. You got two tries, possibly a third. I think, Jeff, you should be allowed to check anything you want on the field. That's my opinion.
I like the idea of the non-calls. You know, the other pass interference, you know, like when they use that phrase during the game, the referee's letting them play. That's right. Now out the window. Because if you're down 10-0 with, say, 2 minutes left to go, and you get the ball, and there's a pass interference, or what you think is a pass interference, and it goes against your team while you're trying to come back, and it ends up being third down now instead of, you know, first and whatever, that they move the ball up for you, I think it's going to delay the game. I think it's going to change the way the game is played, and I think that it's going to end up being a problem. I would rather say give them the two flags and give them one penalty flag, that they're able to challenge one penalty a game if they choose to.
That's
and
a great
I think that would have been a better way.
Right. Now, Dad, I don't think it matters whether you use one of the two you get or you get a special penalty flag. I don't think there's a problem with being able to challenge. Now, again, to me, it should be any penalty. Any penalty you feel at that moment of the day could change or alter your game, I think you should be allowed to challenge it. Why not? Maybe even a holding penalty.
Why have a referee on the field? Why don't we just leave the couple of guys up in the box? Because, I mean, it's ridiculous. The referees, I mean, you're calling plays. Listen, you know and I know. You played football. I didn't play that kind of football. But you played football. There's not a play that goes on where there's not a foul. It's almost... It positively has to be holding. You have to be holding almost every play. So
I got you.
What do you call?
But again, you only get seconds to decide, and you're not getting any extra ones. You still get three. So you're not in the first quarter. You know, there's a hold. There's a guy you don't hold on a second down. You're not likely to use the holding penalty. You may wait till the end of the game, or maybe it was a touchdown, and the defense says, wait, that guy was holding. You know, I think, I like Jeff's idea better, but I don't have a problem with people challenging. You get three a game. You get two a game. You get a third if you get all both right. How you use them? So you're going to use them. Again, nobody's going to throw them away. You would think they're going to save them. The problem that I have, and this is where all this pass interference one comes into play, Jeff, is inside 2 minutes, all reviews are by the booth. So now, theoretically, now we all know, like, say there's a pass play and it looks like maybe it was a catch, not a catch. The booth decides. Think about this. Every single pass play in the NFL, and during 2 minutes, there could be a stop for review on a pass interference, whether it's offense, defense, or no call. Jeff, that's where I think this rule doesn't work.
Oh, I agree with you, dude. I mean, 2 minutes in the NFL could take a half hour.
Yep.
The way that they do it. So, I mean, now all you're doing is stretching the game out to God knows what. And wait till it's a game of importance near the end of the season or a playoff game. And when I mean game of importance, I'm talking like, in November or December where difference is made if a team wins or loses. You know what I mean? It's going to make a big difference for the game. And if they're hoping to shave time off the game, well, they just added a whole bunch of more time to the game with something like this.
Yeah, agreed. 100%.
I agree with you.
I agree with you on that.
I agree with you too, Jeff.
But I like the idea of it. Here's what I would say, and I don't think I'm sure that they didn't put this in, but I would say that it's hard to do that. But to me, you can only challenge penalties outside of the 2 minutes. Inside of 2 minutes, there should be no challenge of penalties because I think it'll just bog the game down. But how do you do that? Because now if I can do it with 2:01 on the clock, but why can't I do it on 1:59 on the clock? So it makes no sense. But I think, Jeff, that's the biggest thing is you're going to bog the game down because we all know every single pass play in the NFL looks like pass interference. And if it doesn't look like pass interference, you look and say, was it pass interference? So it's insane. So I don't know how you go for this one.
Yeah, it is insane, man. It really is.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah,
I think it's necessary because, listen, I love the fact, here's what I love. I love the fact that there's a human element involved all the way around. The guy who throws the ball, the guy who catches the ball, the guy who blocks, the guy who tackles. It's all a human element. Guy misses a play, makes a play, changes the game. And I think the referees, while you don't want them to change the outcome of a game, some of the biggest, most memorable plays in all of sports are based on a bad call by a referee or an umpire. So I think it's part of the game. Now, we all look at the Saints Rams game. None of us had a stake in it. We could care less. You know, it's a big play. It was a great football game. I don't think it necessarily changed the outcome because they still had opportunities to win the game, the Saints. They didn't do it. But if you're a Saints fan, you're flipping. Your team got robbed as far as you're concerned.
Well, you would have to – I would have to agree with you. But here again, if you're looking at that and you're the ref and he's looking right at the play, whoever would that line judge, whatever this guy was, he should have been taken out of the game, not be able to referee no more because you have to be totally blind not to see that. I mean, we're not talking about grabbing hands where they both, you know, they both do, you know, receiver and defender do it. I mean, this was an obvious, I mean, you had to be Ray Charles not to see it. And even he would have heard that. I mean, the referee. Now, my one question is, with that interference, what do you do with a Hail Mary pass? Because and I know, in a Hail Mary pass, if nobody's getting hit, you're not back there. Everybody's diving for that ball.
Yeah, but I'll let you handle that one.
You know, that's going to be an odd one because God only knows the interference that goes on with that and how many teams are now going to turn around and run that play specifically knowing that there's a good chance that there's going to be some kind of pass interference called in that situation. You know, don't you think?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I mean, specifically, say you have 20 seconds left and you're on your 20-yard line. You just heave it up there. It may take 10 seconds off the clock, but now there's a good possibility that you just move the ball up 50, 60 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, listen. All 100% correct. I think this may end up being a bigger issue than the changing of the catch rule. I honestly believe this could be, because I think that you brought up a great point. You know, just about every play in a Hail Mary, there's bodies being bumped, people getting knocked down, and nobody's calling that. But now you're going to get a guy, because it's a scoring play, or you're going to get a challenge inside 2 minutes because that's when they usually happen, and somebody's going to look down there and find somebody banging into somebody, and the next thing you know, because it happens in the end zone, it'll be on the one-yard line. So think now it's a play, Jeff. Dad, at some point, you're the coach, listen, everybody run down there and try to bump into somebody.
Yeah, I would bump into somebody.
You got to think now how many coaches are going to specifically come up with plays for that situation.
Absolutely.
And if it's a Hail Mary, you can have four receivers plus four or five. You can have up to nine guys, possibly more, in the end zone or near where the ball is going. How are you even going to be able to decipher that without looking at that on instant replay before you even make the call?
I think, agree.
Yeah, I think the problem is every couple of years, something happens in the NFL where somebody makes a mistake. And then just owning up to the mistake and say it's human error, there's nothing can be done about it. And that's the way it should be. But now what they do is every time something comes up, they try to come up with a new rule. They think so. And all they're doing is making it more confusing. And be honest with you, pretty soon we're going to be playing flag football because that's what it's coming down to now. It's flag football all over. And if it's not, tell me what you want to call it now. You can't touch this. You can't do that. You can't spit on the field. You can't throw this off. I mean, it's crazy. How do you call all these plays? And you know yourself, every play there's a hold. Every play there's something illegal going on.
Yeah,
and just leave it to. I don't know.
So
why
do
you argue that?
I don't have a problem with being able to. I've said it for years. The last two or three years, I've said I think you should be able to challenge because there's so many bad pass interference penalty calls out there, offensively and defensively, that I think if sometimes it's the opportunity, I just think where it bogs us down is going to be inside 2 minutes because literally every single play will have to be reviewed.
Let me ask you a question. I don't know if I heard it right, but I heard that they're going to stop the – maybe I'm wrong. They're going to stop the onside kick. And they're going to give you fourth down and 25 yards.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't, yeah, I did not,
That's what they were talking about yesterday on what do you call and I don't know whether this was going to be proposed because they were going to make it fourth. And in other words, because nobody gets the ball on onside kick because you're allowed to run up on a guy now.
Right. Well, now you're not allowed to start have a running start. You have to start
right.
from a standstill. So
you
got to
do from a standstill.
Right.
I don't know.
That's a that's something I'd have to read. Like, I like the college overtime because they give you the ball at the 25-yard line and you essentially get the chance to get a first down. And if on fourth down or at the end of it, if you get 3 points or 7 points, the other team's got to match it or beat it. I like it better than the overtime rule here that we have now, but nobody would go for it in the pros. It just would not happen. But
how about just giving them a 7.5 minute period, and whatever happens during that time happens. You know, if that first team that wins the kickoff keeps the ball for 7 minutes and 15 seconds and scores, so be it. You have 15 seconds left. You know, if the fourth quarter runs out of time and you're in the middle of a drive and you're losing and you're coming back, that's it. It's done. I mean, to play in a whole fifth quarter would take too long. But then this here way, in that time period, 7.5 minutes, because you're splitting the quarter in half, everybody should get at least one possession, maybe two, and whatever happens, happens. I don't think I like to put the ball at the 25, and if you get a first down, you keep going. But if you kick a field goal, the other team gets the chance. It's too confusing. Just make it clear and plain and simple. 7.5 minutes, that's it. Go out, play. If you win, you win. If you don't, you got to tie. That's all.
Interesting. Yeah, listen. Sometimes no new rules is the best option, and maybe
I guess,
that. We'll see how it plays out. Listen, I like the idea of it. I think that it's going to need to be fine tuned because it could. Now again, it might not. They may let them play in overtime. There might not be a lot of calls. Who knows? But I mean, I'm sorry. Inside 2 minutes, the half and the end of the game, but. 347-826-9934. Hopefully you guys are out there having a good day and start to a good weekend.
All right, I'm going to let you go because I know you guys are tired. You're trying to cut your show down. And so, Tommy, take care of yourself, huh?
All right, Bob. I'll see you over the
sleep.
Weekend.
All right, you too, Jeff. I know you had a hard day yesterday.
I'll be in better shape. I was off today, so I'm a little bit
that's nice. Yeah. Nice to have them off. All right, have a good time. Enjoy yourself now. Take care, guys.
Hi, Pops.
Hi.
So, Jeff, let's talk about last night because I think that's the important one for us right now, and we'll get back into a little bit of a couple other things. You want me to go first on the review, or you want to go first with your end?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's hear you're a bigger Kiss fan out of us, so you go ahead and go first.
Now, I've seen Kiss before, but it was 40 years ago. I don't have a lot of big memories of that show. I do remember being there. A couple of songs stick out in my brain. Beth, I remember seeing. God of Thunder, I remember hearing. I will tell you that musically, I thought last night was great. I did not get the sense of a lot of backing tracks on music. There was one set where they were doing I Was Made for Loving You, and Paul Stanley was flying back from the crowd back to the stage. His guitar was at his ankles, and there were two guitars playing. So either somebody off stage or a track was playing. I'm not sure which. Other than that, musically, I thought it was really good. The show was fantastic. I thought they did a great job. The techniques, the everything. It was not gaudy, but really good. The vocals, Gene was better than I expected. Paul had a rough night. And I truly believe that whatever good was out of it was on a tape someplace. He could barely talk, which we commented on a few times last night, Jeff. Crowd was into it. The place was packed. And I thought if I would set the bar at 5 being the medium for good or bad, I think the show was a 7, closing in on an 8. I really had a good time, obviously, with my friends. We had a few laughs, and I thought we saw some really good music. The set list was good. A couple of clunkers for me, Psycho Circus, Sonic Boom, kind of clunkers for me. But other than that, lots of old school Kiss. So I'm going to give it a higher mark, maybe 7.5, in there. So that's where I stand on Kiss last night. I'm more interested in you because having not being a big fan and being the first time, I'm curious.
Well, I got to admit, I was a little hesitant about, you know, really enjoying it and everything because I'm not a big Kiss fan. But I have to say that by the time I left there, I was a little bit more of a Kiss fan than I was going into the place. Musically, I thought they were good. I thought the stage show was good. Gene did what he had to do as far as, you know, what you're waiting for Gene to do, you know, breathing the fire, spitting the blood, and everything. His vocals weren't bad. There was a couple times where Paul, it obviously looked like he had stepped away from the mic or his mouth wasn't moving, but yet he kept singing. So it made you wonder if there was a tape or not. Without a doubt, I think there was, because like you mentioned, he couldn't talk.
Oh, yeah.
His regular talking voice was bad. And but, I mean, they moved around well and everything else, especially for men near 70 on high heel platform shoes. The sound was good. The sound was being brought to us could have been a little bit louder, but that was the first concert I ever walked out of that my ears weren't ringing from the music. So it was actually okay for me because I wasn't getting brutally punished, you know, with a loud volume of music, especially with my ears the way they've been the last couple of weeks. But overall, I kind of agree with your grade. Of course, to a 7.5 to an 8, simply because the show was good. It was entertaining. The only thing is they think Paul Stanley talked too much last night.
Agreed.
I never
way
knew
too
that
much.
He was going to talk
much.
As much as he did. That could have been two or three other songs.
Oh, I would tell you that he probably added 15 to 20 minutes to the show with his talking.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. But I got to be honest with you, dude. He interacted with the crowd well.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Even though we know that's probably a standard thing the way that he does it, but he had the crowd going well. They responded to him. One thing that I was definitely kind of shocked about was the makeup of the audience. There was a lot of older people there. There was a lot of young kids there too. And I mean young kids, they looked like they were 10 or younger, but a lot of older people that I didn't expect them to have such a crowd like that. That was probably one of the oldest crowds that I've ever seen at a heavy metal concert before in my life.
Wow. Think about it, Jeff. Yeah. When Kiss came out in 75, you're talking 40 years ago, a lot of the people then, 25 and 30 years old, are 65 and 70 now. So,
oh, yeah, without a doubt. They were probably older than Kiss at the time that they came out, but it was just odd to see. I expected to see more women there. And there wasn't as many women there as I thought there was going to be. It seemed like it was a mostly male audience to me.
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a good mix. I didn't think it was a sausage party, but I didn't think it was, you know, I don't think you were going to look around and see Playboy Playmates and, you know, all of that running around the place. But, I mean, listen, the crowd was great. It was a very big mix throughout the crowd. It was packed. Everybody was into it. It was loud. I thought they did a great job interacting with the crowd. I told it to Paul. I don't know if I mentioned to you on the way out the door. I told Paul that I had a better appreciation for Tommy Thayer as a guitar player after the show last night. I thought he did a great job playing the solos. I mean, he's been playing it for 100 years, but, you know, and sticking to the...
I didn't know who he was. I didn't even know his name. Where did he come from?
Well, see, here's the funny part. Tommy Thayer, back in the 90s, was part of their, like, he was kind of like their road manager. He was in a Kiss tribute band. And when the Kiss got back together, the original band, he actually sat down and taught Ace Frehley the songs again. He sat down and helped teach Ace. So he stuck with the band after, and then when things fell apart, they just invited him to be part of the band. So he's been part of Kiss, I think, since 98. So
he taught Ace Frehley his own songs?
Correct. He sat down to go over everything with Ace because he knew them in and out because he had played them on. I think he had stepped in a couple of tours, played a little bit, but he was, I think, in like a Kiss tribute band or something. And then just stepped in when at the Psycho Circus, when it fell apart again, he stepped in and took over. And listen, I don't like the fact that he became the Ace character, but I also don't like the fact when they tried to do the Vinnie Vincent character or Eric Carr's Fox character. So I'm total, you know, no idea what I'm talking about because I don't want him to be Ace, but I don't want him to be his own character. So it doesn't work. But while I've not been a big fan of them continuing without the original four, I thought last night was great. I'll ask you this. Well, you know, usually when you go to a concert or a movie about a band, you immediately go home or you know, over the next few days, you kind of revisit some of the old songs and different. Will it make you revisit their, I don't say catalog, but some of the songs you liked in the past and maybe get them into your iPod or onto your phone?
Oh, I already did that earlier today. And the reason that I did it is because I have Amazon Music. And not for nothing, in the past, I was buying songs from iTunes. So a lot of those Kiss songs were always songs that I was like, well, I'm not going to buy them this time around because I want these songs or I need these songs for this reason, whatever the case was, you know, whether I was learning songs for a band or whatever. But now with Amazon Music, it's a little different. So I'm able to just get what I want when I want it. So I ended up putting like 50 songs from Kiss of, you know, whether from live albums or the early albums. And made sure that I had them in the phone because there were songs that I liked. But last night, I can't say that I downloaded anything that was new. You know, any of the newest stuff. It was all older stuff.
Right.
And some of these stuff that they did in the past, like God of Thunder, I totally forgot about that song.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah. So it was actually a pleasant surprise to hear that one. When they started playing it, I knew it. I remembered it, of course. But it was one of those songs that kind of slipped through the cracks for me.
Sure.
But it was definitely cool to see what they did and how they played. And I thought that they did pretty good. And you know, I understand your point and agree with you. If it's not the original members, how do you do it? What do you do? Do you bring back a Vinnie Vincent character or Eric Carr? But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But I guess nobody wants to. Eric Carr died, so his character should have died too. Okay,
yeah,
so
did.
I can see that.
It did. Yep, it did. But now would you create a new character for Eric Singer? I thought they did the right thing. Ultimately, looking back at it, keeping, you know, it's not about the guy behind the mask. It's about the mask. It's about the character. Kiss is, you know, the demon, the Star Child, Space Ace, and the cat. And almost regardless of who's behind it, doesn't really matter. Now, listen, could I go see Kiss, as Dave suggested, with four different guys? Absolutely not. I would never go if Gene and Paul are there. Would I go again is the big question. That's the big question. But, yeah,
well,
Jeff,
I got to agree with you there, too. I can't see how they would want the band
to
continue without one of them in it. But
correct.
You're right. The mask, the paint and everything, the makeup is the visualization of that band. So, it's like
absolutely.
You said, it really doesn't matter who's behind it. But when you look at Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley, you know that it's Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley.
100%
you know,
correct. Correct.
Before they were on mat, we didn't know what they looked like, so we could only imagine. But after now knowing what they look like for over 30 years, closing in on 40 years that we know what they look like without the makeup, it's you'll know if it's them or not just by their body language, what they look like.
Oh,
so
sure.
They have to be there. If they're not there, they can't go on. But I wouldn't be surprised if Gene tried because as long as he can make money off it.
Oh, that's the big thing. I don't think it'll. I think when it happens, it'll be done. I think their last concert should be Madison Square Garden. I think, listen, I would have loved last night to have the original guys come out. I know there was always talk of Ace being part of it, But then about a month ago, Ace's girlfriend accused Gene of groping her. So I figured that would be the kind of the end of getting them guys back together for a song or two. So
why is Peter Criss out, and what happened with him? I don't know the story because I wasn't a fan.
Well, essentially it was this. Peter was both of them had addictions, whether it was drinking or drugs or both. And they both thought, like anything else, Jeff, you're successful. I'm the most important part. I'm the most important part. I'm the most important part. The bigger problem with Ace and Peter was they really were playing stuff that they weren't happy with. And ultimately, as the years went on, they couldn't play anymore. Now, I saw the two of them a bunch of years back at a show for Eddie Trunk. It was probably about 8 years ago. And they could barely play. I mean, Peter was just, terrible. So, but they both had the opportunity after 96 to stick around. They just got to be addicts, and they couldn't. They always demanded more. And at that point, when they both had left the band, they sold the rights to their characters back to Gene and Paul. So they owned it from the original band. But they sold it. I think it was for very little money. And, now at that point, there was a lot of hard feelings about it, a lot of bad feelings. And, Peter's never been talked about. Gene and Paul have played on some of Ace's solo stuff. Ace has played at a couple of their benefits that Gene's done. They've jammed acoustically at some shows. And I thought they were primed for this. Ace would have popped up, especially at the Garden. And, again, like I said, about a month or so ago, Ace's girlfriend accused Gene of groping her, which is very possible. And that seemed to put to bed the chance of them ever playing together. But
now, if you're Ace Frehley, knowing that you spent most of your musical career out of KISS, but yet still being associated with KISS, even if Gene groped your girlfriend, don't you tell her, listen, sweetie, you got to take one for the team. This is the last chance at a payday here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be playing dingbats the rest of my life when I'm closing in on 80 because I have no money. We need for this to happen and go down. It didn't happen. Go back inside and shut up.
Yes. Well, here's the thing about, and it's the reason why KISS will live forever and those guys will always be associated with a guy who, like, let's put it right. I know you're not the biggest KISS fan in the whole world, but Tommy Thayer has been in KISS longer than Ace Frehley was in KISS. Yet nobody outside of a big KISS fan knows who Tommy Thayer is. Here's why. Because Ace Frehley is associated with that design, with that mask, whatever you want to call it. So no matter what Ace Frehley does his whole life, when anybody sees KISS and they see that makeup, it's Ace Frehley. Regardless of who's behind that mask, it's Ace Frehley.
I just mentioned that to somebody earlier today.
Okay.
And said that there's a chance, I didn't know what the timeline was, but that Peter Criss and Ace Frehley have been out of KISS longer than they ever were in KISS. That's one thing.
Absolutely, 100% right. Yep.
Second of all, when you're talking about the makeup, okay, last night when they showed close-ups of those two guys, it was obvious that it wasn't Peter Criss and Ace Frehley. I mean, even if they said that they were there, you would have known that they weren't.
100%.
They're just different body shapes and everything else. But like you said, at this point in time, because their show was such a visual, that it's the visualization that people see. And you're right. It's the makeup. The makeup is right, and they're playing the roles and everything else. Like when they did Beth last night, I don't know if that guy was really playing the piano. He could have been back there playing a piano, but that wasn't what was coming out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there was obviously a track going because you heard the horns and the violins and all of that. So.
Yeah, but if he's playing, that could be something that he's playing along where he's got headphones and he's playing along to the track. Chances are he wasn't actually playing the piano. I that would be my take on it.
Okay.
But, he's playing a role. He's acting out. It's the same thing as if you were watching the, the Sopranos, aside from the guy that played Tony Soprano, James Gandolfini, any one of those other guys could have been replaced by another actor because they weren't the main star. And at this point in time, the main people in that band is Paul and Gene. And the only reason that Ace even got the recognition that he did is because of the smoke coming out of the guitar and the things that he did on stage. And when he released that solo album, like they all did, his was probably the best of the four. And he's a New York boy, too. So, you know, he gets a little bit of recognition around here. Peter Criss, he's a drummer. You know what I mean? He's just in the background. He's not in the forefront.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, you're right. The makeup is what helps those guys pull it off, you know?
Absolutely. So, I mean, listen, no matter what happens to Ace Frehley, no matter what kind of career he has, anybody who sees that Kiss makeup from now till, you know, when the last Kiss fan dies, they're going to, I don't care what their thought process, they're going to say it's Ace. Nobody calls Tommy Thayer Ace. He plays the Ace character, but he's not Ace. But if I was talking to a bunch of people on the job today. If I took a picture of Kiss, even now, and showed them, they would look at the Ace character and goes, that's Ace. It's not Ace. It's Ace's character, Space Ace, whatever you want to call him, Spaceman, whatever. But that is not Ace Frehley, but he'll always be associated as that character and the guy who's actually in Kiss, other than the guys, who, like I said, who are people who are fans and know the story and know who they are. So maybe it's a curse. Maybe it's a reward. I have no idea. If you're Ace Frehley, but you're right. If she should have talked to the girlfriend about, let's hang on to the accusations till after the concerts.
Yeah, really. And you know, not for nothing, kudos to Gene and Paul for buying back those characters.
Oh. Yeah.
Just because now it gives them the freedom to hire whoever they want to fill those roles. Because now all they're doing is filling a role. Ace Frehley played the spaceman. Peter Criss played the cat at one point in time. Now you have two other guys playing those roles. And that's exactly what it is. Because let's face it, Kiss at this point in time has to be more of a business than it is a band.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But look, here it is, Jeff. They're going out on a 3-year, 300 show tour with merch and everything else. This is worth, think about if he had held out and not given the character back, which he couldn't have easily done. I mean,
all
and I think they,
that they would have had to come up with a character.
Correct. But it never would have felt the same. Again, as a Kiss fan, watching Vincent run around with the Sith or whatever it was, and Eric Carr as the Fox was never the same. It was never, ever, ever, ever the same. It was totally different. And that's why I was always conflicted on whether other guys dressing up as Ace and Peter or the Cat and the Spaceman was as good or not as good at what they should do. And you know, to the point where I just say, you know, I'd rather just go away because I can't make up my mind, keep the character alive or change the character based on the fact that it's not Ace and Peter behind it. It's like this. What's more important, Jeff? Maybe this is the question to ask you. What's more important, the character or the guy behind the character? Because I can make arguments both ways because Gene and Paul, nobody could take those two characters. Yet the other two seem to have been replaced.
Well, they've been replaced several times over simply because of personnel coming in and out of the band. So they're showing that the character is actually stronger than the man behind it.
Correct,
because,
100%.
You know, there's at least two or three people that have played the roles, you know, of those characters. And that's what we should refer to them as characters.
Yeah.
And you're right.
Well, that's what they
Nobody's
are.
Nobody's going to be able to replace Gene and Paul at this point in time.
No.
But Ace Frehley and Peter Criss have been in and out of the band a couple times. So it's easy to replace them. They were just the originals. And like I said earlier, the only one that should never be duplicated again would be Eric Carr, who ended up dying. Who, by the way, I read about today, And I'll just give you a little bit of trivia, something that I know that you probably don't know. And I'd be a little surprised to hear. Eric Carr died the same day and year that Freddie Mercury died.
I did know that. I would not have remembered it, but I've definitely read it. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, I believe I read that before. So, wow, but that is obviously he was buried on the back page on that day. Wow.
Yeah, back page. I think he was in the nightly edition or something. He didn't even make the daytime papers on that one.
Yeah,
you know?
Scary. Yeah, listen, Eric Carr was,
you know, as big of a character as he was, a musician as he was overshadowed by Freddie Mercury.
The problem is, see, here's the problem with the true drummers they had. Now, Eric Singer, the guy who plays now, really works well in the band. He does a good job. Eric Carr was more of a metal drummer. And his big album with them was obviously Creatures of the Night. And that's their heaviest. I mean, you heard the songs last night, War Machine, I Love It Loud. It's a really hard there. It was their effort after Dynasty, which was kind of their ode to their trying to disco hard rock, disco rock album. Creatures of the Night, that was right in the middle of the metal era, like 81. So all the bands were doing hard rock. You know, I don't tell you the songs, the albums that came out. So they tried to get heavy. And I thought, to me, after the original albums, after Love Gun and all of those, it's their best album from 81 going forward by far. It's the best album they ever put out after 80, in the 80s and forward. So that's why Eric Carr was great. But Eric Carr, to me, was not great playing the Peter stuff because he just wasn't his style.
Well, you know, maybe not so, but, you know, Eric Carr was there. He replaced Peter Criss. He was the first drummer that was on Mass, correct?
Yes.
So he was there for a lot of firsts. The first replacement drummer, first drummer to be on Mass with the rest of the band. You know,
yes.
So there was a lot of things that he was there for, big moments with Kiss.
Yes.
And, you know, regardless of what you say about the first set of albums that came out and whatever kind of drummer you want to classify Eric Carr is as, you know, he is the one that replaced Peter Criss. So
yes,
that's got to stand for something for that guy.
Oh,
you know, like,
absolutely.
He's going to be under the scrutiny of all Kiss fans probably for all time, because of who we replaced and when he came on the map. You know what I mean?
I tell you, there's a whole generation of Kiss fans who grew up Eric Carr fans. I loved Eric Carr. The one thing you'll say about Gene and Paul, there are a lot of things. They're pompous. They're arrogant. They're greedy. You know, whatever you want to say about them. They're very loyal guys. I mean, when Eric was basically dying, they slowed the band down, kept him in all the videos. Even though he wasn't playing on the songs, they kept him in the videos. You know, the same thing with Vinnie Vincent when he went off the wire. You know, they're very, you know, even with Ace and Peter, they tried everything to make it work the first time. I mean, they brought them back the second time. They were basically hired help, and they tried to make it work with them, and those guys were just, you know, it's like, they were in the band, they sold their rights back, they came back and they said, okay, give us back our rights. And they were like, no, we own the character. We'll pay you handsomely for your shows, but we're not giving you, now it's no longer. Don't forget, they were four equal partners in the band. And they sold, I believe Ace sold his rights, I think, in 1981 for $50,000.
That's it.
I read his books, I read Gene's books. I believe at the end of the day, he got $50,000. I think Peter got a little bit more. I want to say Peter got over 100, but that they basically sold it for dirt. Considering what Kiss as a band is worth, it's pocket change. And then when they came back,
I was saying, man, what a businessman Gene Simmons, huh?
Yep. Now let me ask you a final question on this one. Could it be possible now? Now, I know maybe 2 days ago it would have been an impossibility. Is it possible that a Kiss tune could pop into the Hard Rock and Sports or any form of band at this point?
Oh, yeah. I don't know, man. You never know. But
I mean, I can see you rocking out to God of Thunder, playing that little bass line. I mean, I could see that. It's a pretty cool bass line.
We did watch a bunch of fat guys play Kiss tunes last night, so I guess a bunch of fat guys could play Kiss tunes somewhere else.
It's not much of a stretch, Jeff. It's not much of a stretch.
Hey, listen, and speaking of the new band, it's not the Hard Rock and Sports band that's going to be getting back together, but a completely new outfit that's going to be starting this Tuesday. So
that's correct.
You never know. I mean, listen, if somebody picks a song, the rest of us have to learn it. That's all I'm saying. Pretty certain that I won't be picking a Kiss song, but I can't speak for everybody else involved.
Well, I would say this. 2 nights ago, we had practice, and I, being the Kiss fan in the band, I'm not sure what the other new members are, if they are or not. I think there would have been two votes to veto that, one being you and the other being our other guitar player. Now it might be more, at least one I might get away with. The other guy, I don't think I'll be able to sway. Although him and I did play a Kiss tune in a different band. I believe we played Strutter in a different band. So it's not impossible to think. So I would like to give consideration to an old school Kiss tune. I think God of Thunder would be cool because I think it's got a great bass line to it. Little melody. It's a nice thing. But we will talk about that at a different venue at a different time. So,
well, all I'm saying is that if God of Thunder is the one that's picked, I'm going to sing it.
Listen, I would be now. I think it has to be. I will have to speak to the other guy. I think would be the biggest no vote, and that might just sway it if you agreed to not only play that song but to sing it Gene Simmons style. I think we'd have to put that in the song. That in the set.
All we got to do is get the backing track.
Well, is it you singing on the backing track? So you're going to sing it and play it behind you?
Yeah.
So it's bad. Well,
he did it last night. Why can't I do it?
Absolutely. Guys, 347-826-9934. Guys, it's going to be a short show. I'm going to run through a couple things with Jeff. Now that we're going to bring this to an end, but I definitely wanted to get and have this conversation. Listen, we railed for about a half hour on that show. It was a great time. One thing I would say is I think I came out of there with the thought of, you know, maybe a couple times a year we do that as friends. But I will tell you, as friends, we should just go to dinner once in a blue moon, whether it's in Staten Island or city, because sitting the car at the table together for that hour, I could have stayed two more. And it was fun.
Oh, definitely. And you see that the text that I sent out earlier today to you guys, hoping that we could manage to get a day in the summer around my birthday and just meet up there and just wander around, go find music stores, whatever, and just spend the day up there and have a little fun because it's always fun, man, and to see everybody and to hang out. I just wish that it could happen more often, and there could be more of us when it does happen. But,
whether
it's the three of us or two of us, it's fine with me.
Yeah, I agree. Here's the thing. Listen, you know, we're getting off the beaten path. But, listen, I always feel that when we do these events type of things, I always want to invite everybody. But I've gotten so many no's in the past that I just kind of guess. It really comes down to when these kind of concerts come up. Listen, Maiden's coming back in July. They're playing at the Barclays Center. They're playing an old school set. Am I going to harass you and Paul at some point? Yes. Once I figure out if I want and can, of course I'm going to harass you guys and say, guys, Maiden in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, old school Maiden set, not off a new album, playing old, you know, real old school. That's the stuff. But I know that others are automatic no's. So it is what it is. You know, doesn't mean you have to go or Paul has to go or we all have to go. But my texts or my invites, same for you. And I got a feeling same for you and Paul. You know, it's when Kiss came up, Paul called me and said, let's go see Kiss because you figured I would be the only one who would go. I'm glad you and Mike came. We had a good time.
Oh, I'm glad that I went too, man. And I appreciate it. the show and going to see them last night. And listen, it's always fun. And my main thing was to see you guys and hang out with you guys, because no matter what happens, we don't get to see one another enough. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
The watching the bands made it much more fun. It added
and
to
it was,
so
yeah,
it made it
and
fun.
The fact that you came out of there a little bit more of a Kiss fan, you wouldn't call yourself a Kiss fan, but you a little bit more of a Kiss fan is a plus. I think it. Again, I always think Kiss is that band that you don't appreciate until you see them live, because it's everything. It's the music. It's the interaction. It's the Mike Passamonte and I used to argue, and I would say, Mike, I know you like Motley Crue and their stage show, but it came from Kiss. No, and just today finally said, you know what? I understand what you're saying. And I said, Mike, they were doing this in the 70s, bigger. I mean, just insane. You know, last night was a quarter of what I watched when I was a kid. But Kiss is a visual band, and it's not always about their records. Not everybody kind of grasps it. So I'm glad you had a good time, and I look forward to the next next excursion of our crowd.
Yeah, it's always fun, man.
Absolutely. So 347-826-9934. Hard Rock and Sports will be back next Thursday night. I know we got a guest, and it's escaping me who our guest is. On the 11th, we got Steph Paynes from Led Zeppelin. We got a whole bunch of guests right through. I think we're completely booked going forward. We got the big show coming up on the draft show. Jeff, don't forget, next week is our first mock draft. You and I will do our own mock drafts next Thursday night, so start your homework. We got to do one every week, change it around. We'll figure it out. And I want to see our final mock draft will be right before the thing, and we'll see how we do against what actually happens.
You know, are you really looking forward to the draft this year?
Yes.
And speaking of the draft, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, the Giants being in a full rebuild mode, you got to figure now. Yeah, that's what you have to call it, because there is no mild rebuild mode. But the reason I bring it up is because we talked about something last night at the restaurant before we went to the concert that I didn't quite agree with Mike, but we were getting on ready to gun on our way out and to go over to Madison Square Garden. And that's with the Giants picking up Sam Rosen and learning for a year under Eli.
Yes.
After thinking about it a little bit more, I kind of disagree more with Mike's point, although I do understand his point. You throw him in there, you let him get the year under his belt regardless of what happens. This is a kid that was on a bad team. Now, if you put him on another bad team and you just tell him, okay, now go out there, play, and whatever happens, happens, I think you're liable to damage him. I think the best thing to do is to sit behind a guy like Eli for this year, because he got a taste of the NFL last year. If Eli is that bad this year, you can always put the kid in and see what happens. But for him to learn, to see the work ethic, learn behind somebody that has a couple Super Bowl rings, I think would be beneficial for the Giants. Even if you end up at some point in the time during blowouts or something, you put him in there. Or if you're up by several points and, you know, you put them in for the second half of the fourth quarter and you get them a little playing time here and there, I think it will be beneficial to his career. Let him build up a little bit more confidence. Don't just what happened last year and then compound it by maybe putting him out on a bad team this year. That's if the Giants are able to pick him up this year, which if I was them, I'm surprised. I heard that there was three teams that are interested in him, and the Giants being one of them. I believe it was the Dolphins, and I can't remember who else it was. But there are three teams that are interested in Rosen. But what are your thoughts on that?
I wholeheartedly agree with you, Jeff, and I did last night as well. I think that Rosen didn't prove anything to anybody. I'm not blaming him for last year for being bad, for the team being bad, but he did not prove anything to me. And to me, if the Giants made the trade a month ago and they cut Eli and they saved the $5 million on the cap, on the bonus, and all that goes with it, you know what? I couldn't live with it. I don't like it. I would prefer Eli. Now, what if, again, it's a big what if. What if the Giants are 4-1 or 5-3 at the midway point and they're in the middle of the wild card race? Again, do we expect it? No, absolutely not. But we all seen the NFL the last few years. Teams jump. It could happen. What if they do? You know, I think is the next to zero chance of that happening with Rosen. I think the Giants build the team, get the other pieces working, learning the offense with Eli, Pim guiding them, and then you feed Rosen in, just like you said. If they're bad, you get them in early. If the Giants actually are playing well and have a chance to do something, then he rides behind Eli, and he learns for a year. Do I expect it to be Eli's last year? Yes. I think short of a deep playoff run, this is it for Eli. The Giants want to save the $20 million, and they will go to another quarterback next year regardless. But if they get a deep playoff run, which we all know is very unlikely, that might be the only thing that forces them to bring him back another year. But, Jeff, to your point, yes, I think him learning behind Eli, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, and listen, you're right. If the Giants are 4-1, 5-3 at that time, of course, you know, that is a stretch, but you reassess what's happening, what's coming up.
Correct.
And what you project for that team in its current state to go forward game by game.
Yep.
So if by some chance they're 5-3 at the halfway point of the season, you can't turn around and even say, okay, the next three games are favorable. No, you have to take it game by game, pretty much quarter by quarter with a team the way that they are right now.
100%.
But I will say this much. They have Barkley and they have Golden Tate. And I believe that Golden Tate will be important.
Sure.
For young quarterbacks development.
Yep.
Okay. Yes, it's something right now for Eli, but if they get Rosen and even if the Giants are 5-3 at the halfway point, and then next thing you know, they're 6-5, well, then it's time to tell Eli, you take the back seat, let this kid go in there, let's see what he can do.
Yeah.
Because at some point in time, you need to know, you don't want to leave your roster with three new quarterbacks on it and say, okay, guys, you're going to start and we'll see what happens. If you're no good, then one of you is going in. You need to have a definitive plan, you know, and the Giants don't strike me as the kind of team that's going to do what the Jets did a couple years ago and just be like, you go out instead of him this time. You know what I mean? It just makes no sense. So if they were to acquire Rosen, yes, he has to start at some time during this season, but you would have to pick almost at the right moment. And even if he sat for half a season behind Eli, it's still a learning experience to see how Eli runs a game, how he manages, all sorts of things. It's going to be a learning experience. There was nobody says you can't learn behind Sam Bradford because Sam Bradford gets hurt. And you never know how long or how well he's going to play and how long he's going to play for. Eli, I mean, you know, his age, he's never been injured. God forbid he could get injured the first play of the game, of the first game. But he's still going to learn by being on the same team with Eli. He's going to learn.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend. I agree with you. I think at this point, you know, listen, I am torn. But I would say this. If I'm going to use a pick, whether it's my number six pick in the draft or trading one of my number two pick, second round pick, I will overpay and give a 2 and a 3 for Rosen. It's overpaying because if they're trading him, it means they're taking a quarterback number one. There's only so many takers, and I don't think many teams will do better than number two. If I was the Giants, I would overpay without having to give up one of my number one picks. I would give a 2. And one of my number threes, because they have two of them, and I would get Rosen. And so number two will do it for good. I think it's worth the shot because I don't love any of the quarterbacks in this draft. And Rosen's at least considered a prospect, a guy who's got the ability to play in this league. He was a number 10 pick in the draft last year. So I think, Jeff, if I'm the Giants, I would explore that as best they could without overpaying.
Well, listen, you know what, Tom? Here's the thing. You can offer the second and the third, okay?
Right.
That's good. But St. Louis – the Cardinals, I'm sorry. I got them confused. St.
Arizona.
Louis Cardinals, it's been a while.
Yeah.
The Cardinals know what picks the Giants have. So it's not like the picks are under wraps and nobody knows exactly what picks they got. And they know they need a quarterback. But the good thing is say that the Giants turn around and say, we'll give you a second and third. And the Cardinals say, you know what, we're going to think about that. I'll get back to you in a couple hours. And they say, no, we don't like that. They could immediately counteroffer and say, we'll give you a first and a third. But you can't have our first. We'll give you the 17th pick. You know, you're going to get the Cleveland pick and the Cleveland third. You know what I mean? And we're keeping our picks because it's luxury. Because even if they keep their first-round pick and they get rid of the other first-round pick that from Cleveland is a bonus, and if they could get whatever they're looking for plus a quarterback, that's a possible NFL-ready quarterback, that's worth that extra first-round pick to me. No?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, it's hard to argue. If I can get my future quarterback with a number 17 pick or some variation of it, again, you know, if you're the Giants, you got to lock it up. You like to find it. I would love to find it as a guy who's in the league, a Bridgewater or Rosen or somebody like that. So I'm with you, Jeff. I'm with you 100%.
You know, it's and you got to think of it this way too. If you get rid of a first-round pick in this draft right now, in 2019, and you come out of it getting a quarterback that could be your quarterback of the future and not give up a first-rounder for next year, you're ahead of the game.
Totally. Agreed.
But totally ahead of the game.
Yep. I agree. Listen, I agree with you. I think that's why I think this draft is going to be very interesting, because I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen prior. I think there's a lot of intrigue on the quarterbacks. I think this is a draft. You're going to see a lot of teams trading up and down. I think the Jets are trading down in this draft. He's already made it clear he's willing to make the trade and move down a couple spots. You know?
You know what?
If
they had done better in free agency and had gotten a few more players that they really needed, you know, a few more positions that they really needed, I wouldn't have had such a problem with it.
Right.
But I kind of have a problem with it simply because they need too many different pieces for me. They need offensive linemen. They need an edge rusher. They need a cornerback. If they had managed to get some of that in the free agency, then I wouldn't have a problem with it. But I think they should keep that third-round pick because I think they're going to get a good player at that position, that part of the draft.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Listen, of course. But if you could go, listen, they're a very important pick. Here's why. If Arizona goes Murray, okay, and then who's number two is
San Francisco, right?
San Francisco. They're going to go Nick Bosa. 99% they're going Bosa. Everybody right now is saying that there's a real good chance that Gruden is going to take Haskins at four. So you're the Jets. If you're a team that wants Haskins, if you're the Dolphins, if you're the Giants, if you are sitting in the catbird seat, you can move up. You can move up in front of the 40 the Raiders and grab Haskins. The Jets could drop back. Let's say the Giants did a trade. You know, you're dropping back to six. You can still get there's four or five great offensive linemen in this draft. There's a dozen, maybe eight great defensive pass rushers inside and out. So you're guaranteed to get somebody, and you're going to wind up picking up a number two, maybe maybe two number twos. So if you're the Jets, Jeff, if you could drop back probably three or four spots and still wind up with a great player in this draft, because the needs you have, defensive line, offensive line, you can solve it anywhere in the top 10 this year with no problem. So it's just a consideration. It's a consideration. They're in a very good spot, and I think there's plenty of teams right now that are going to move up and down in this draft because there's so many great players on the line that you can help yourself. And there's a lot of teams. Listen, the Patriots have tons of picks. They can move way up. They need to start looking into their future. They need a receiver. I mean, they need some help on the offensive line. They lost Trey Flowers, their best pass rusher. Oh, granted, he'll fix it because he's Belichick. But don't be surprised if some of these teams toward the bottom don't try to jump all the way up.
Yeah, but you know what, Tom? Here's another thing to consider too, okay? The Jets have a hard enough time hitting on a first-round pick. Now you're talking about them getting an extra second-round, third-round pick, whatever it is, to trade down. They don't have anybody from prior drafts that were drafted that far down the line that is still on their team. So, I mean, this team has already shown that it can't handle drafting and scouting. So to have an extra pick is, to me, I don't want to say not worth it, but what's to say that they're going to cash in? I mean, think about all the first-rounders that are gone, just the first-rounders that are gone. Now they may end up trading Darren Lee. There seems to be a market developing for Darren Lee, and that's another first-round pick.
Yep.
You know, they picked a man, I can't even remember what his name was. He was a cornerback a couple years ago. He's gone. You know, Marcus May from 2 years ago, injured. Who knows if this kid's even going to be on the field. They really don't even talk about him.
Yeah. No,
you
listen.
You ever noticed that?
Yes. Listen, I agree with you. Listen, I agree wholeheartedly. All I say is this. If you can get an extra pick, you have a better chance of coming out of there with more picks. So if you have four picks, okay, it's good. You have a 1 in 4 chance. You have a chance that somebody in there is going to come out good. Okay. If you have 8 picks, well, you have a better chance of somebody coming out of there being good with 8 picks. Not that it's guaranteed. We all know we've seen plenty of drafts where they were just terrible drafts, no matter what happens for both the New York teams. So it's interesting. I've come to love the draft from the show perspective because there's so much to talk about. And over the next 3 or 4 weeks, it's gonna heat up.
To talk about, but you know what? With some of the defensive people that are coming out in this draft, I feel as though that some of those prospects are can't miss. And if the Jets are in position, let me ask you something. You're the Giants GM, okay? And you have a kid like Lawrence Taylor coming out in the draft, but you could trade away and accumulate more picks, or you could make the pick and possibly get another Lawrence Taylor. And I'm not saying that there's a Lawrence Taylor coming out of this draft, but they're talking very highly of some of these young defensive players in the first 3 or 4 picks. You bypass that and hope that you still get somebody worthwhile for an extra pick that you may fuck up anyway.
Well, here's why, Jeff, because there's no guarantee that Nick Bosa or Josh Allen or the kid Williams from Alabama are guarantees. We've all seen, you know, people drafted Ryan Leaf. That didn't work out. What's his name got picked at top of draft? Jamarcus Russell got picked at top of draft. So just because a guy's there doesn't mean they're a guarantee either. I don't think there is a Lawrence Taylor-like guy in this draft. They may all turn out to be. I love Josh Allen. If I was the Jets, I would stay at 3 and pick Josh. I think that guy will change that team around within 2 years. He's that good. I watched him at Kentucky, and he is fantastic. So, yeah.
Would you say he's on par with Khalil Mack?
It's hard to say, Jeff. You know, you watch him, and it's, you know, there are certain, like Kentucky, while it's a bigger school, it's not really a great football school, so I'm always leery of that. But Khalil Mack went to Buffalo. So, I mean, you know, I had no idea. You went to Buffalo. So it's hard to tell. You just never know who that guy's going to be, you know, the next great one. You know, some of them, you know, the Peyton Manning, everybody knew. You know, there are certain people who go to certain schools who you know. But it's Nick Bosa's coming out of Ohio State. His brother's been okay, but hurt a ton in the pros. It's hard for me to say he's going to be. But you just don't know. The guy who plays in a big school fails, and the guy who plays in a little school does great. you know, I didn't know who J.J. Watt was in college. The guy's the best player in football. So, you know, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to make that statement.
Oh, I'm just – listen, I understand that it's two different games and everything else. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But you know what? A lot of these younger kids coming out of college, you'll hear some of these scouts talk about them and say, you know what, he's compared to a young so-and-so. He's compared to a young this guy. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask, because if you know that you have a Khalil-like Mack player or Lawrence Taylor-like player coming out, and your luck and the way that your draft record has been the last couple of years, is it worth it to take it an extra pick and pass up on a talent like that just so that you could say, well, here's another player. I'm throwing the dart with my eyes closed. Am I going to get a bullseye or not? I don't know. But I know that if I take this guy, I'm getting closer to a bullseye than if I have if I'm blindfolded with my eyes closed because I got an extra pick.
100%. Yes. Listen, obviously, you can't be blamed. Let's put it that way. You can't be blamed if you take Nick Bosa in this draft. You can't probably be blamed if you take Josh Allen in this draft. Now, if at number two or three you reach for Rashawn Gary from Michigan or Montez Sweat, you know, at two or three, okay. Now you're in that I'm not sure thing, but you know, the Jets. That's a perfect example, Jeff. Leonard Williams. When Leonard Williams came up in the draft, nobody thought he would last to the Jets. Everybody thought he was going to go before the Jets to the Washington Redskins, and the Redskins took the offensive lineman, and he fell into the Jets' lap. He was considered by far the best defensive player in the draft and the defensive lineman in the draft. And the Jets snatched him up, even though they already had two guys playing his position, right? And it was a no-brainer. Would you agree?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I know the thought process behind it. And,
right.
And it isn't exactly panning out at this point in time.
Exactly my point. But if he does, if after next year he hasn't reached that next level and the Jets cut ties, are you going to look back and go, oh, Mike McCagan, what a terrible pick. He's not even on the team anymore. No, you're going to go, he had no choice. He picked the best player in the lineman in the draft.
This is what I'm going to say about that, Tom. Okay? You're 100% right with that way of thinking, but you have to also say they didn't do anything to help him out. So there he is on the first line of defense getting double and sometimes triple teamed. So it really didn't matter who else they had alongside him because he was neutralized. And they didn't have anybody that was as good as him or better to neutralize the neutralization, so to speak.
Yep.
So when you got somebody like Leonard Williams, I'm not saying that this guy is an all-world, all-pro football player. Don't get me wrong. But you don't know if he could be or not because they didn't have anything else. So all you got to do is stop him. And, you know, two beats one, put two guys on him. He can't get past two guys all the time.
I agree. What do we talk about all the time? It's sometimes it's not who the player is. It's where the player plays. So sometimes a guy who might be a marginal player winds up on a great team and his career takes off. And the guy who's a great player winds up on a bad team and his career never takes off because he's not surrounded with the people who make him. Listen, football's the ultimate team game. You know, you could be great, but you still have to have great players around you. Listen, Lawrence Taylor is the best I ever saw. He played with another Hall of Famer in Harry Carson and a guy I think should be in the Hall of Fame in Carl Banks. Carl Banks was a better all-around linebacker for most of his career than Lawrence Taylor was. But Lawrence Taylor was the best I ever saw for 4 or 5 years. But Carl Banks was a great player. So LT could not be doubled and triple teamed because he had two other great guys on the other side of him, not counting Pepper Johnson and Gary Reason. So it's a difference is not only who you are, but who drafts you and how they surround you. And you made a great point with that with Leonard Williams. And I think that's the big part. So the draft is a hit or miss. I'm looking forward to the next one. I'm looking forward to us doing a couple of mock drafts and seeing who gets it right.
Well, time will tell. And, I mean, the experts keep changing their drafts.
Absolutely.
And it will probably change a bunch of times already after free agency,
sure.
Trade rumors, anything, you know.
I think last year we said the biggest piece of the puzzle was going to be the first pick because nobody knew who the first quarterback off the board was, right? Nobody knew. I think we were all betting it was going to be Sam Darnold. I think we were all surprised when it was Baker Mayfield. I think there was a bit of surprise there. Good for the Jets, most people. I think either Jets getting either one of them would have been a good thing. But the Giants, we already knew it was taking Barkley. It was pretty much a locked-in thing. So I think this year it's kind of the same thing. What does Arizona do? Do they wait till the draft? Do they wait till around the clock? Do they make a deal well before? I think a lot of it's going to depend. And then I think depending on what they do, this entire draft could be completely shaken up at that point. If both Murray
and
Haskins are available after one, I think this whole draft is changing.
I think the longer that Arizona holds on to that pick,
sure,
I think it's going to be the less they're going to get.
Great point.
Hear me out. Say you're the Giants, okay?
Yeah.
And you turn around and you call up Arizona, and let's just say for the sake of this exercise, so to speak, that they turn around and they say, we're going to give you Cleveland's first and third that we got for the Beckham trade for Rosen. And they turn around and they're like, well, we want their first and third, and your first next year. And the Giants be like, no, we can't do it. So now the next team calls up and says, we'll give you our first and this year and next year. But I don't know who the next team would be to call, but say that they're in better shape than the Giants, so that first-round picks are going to be almost like second-round picks.
Correct.
And they're like, no, it's not enough. So now they want Murray, and if they don't get rid of Rosen, that's going to put them kind of in a bind.
Oh, yeah, no, they have to get rid of Murray if they're going to go after Rosen. You're right, 100%.
So they got to get rid of Rosen to go after Murray.
Yes, 100%.
Instead of the other way around.
Yeah, the question's going to be, Jeff, at the end of the day, how long do they wait? Do they wait till the last minute? To me, it's really, I'm trying to sit here thinking about who the third team would be that would be interested. I mean, two for sure. Could it be that?
I can't remember who it was.
Could it be the Jaguars?
No, it wasn't the Jaguars.
They just got Foles.
Wasn't the Jaguars, but it might have been the Redskins. I don't remember, to be honest.
Yes, that's exactly who it is. It's the Washington Redskins. Great pick.
But
so the Giants, Redskins,
you still got to think. You got to think, Tom. They should be fielding offers now, because now I think the people would know if they know they want Murray, they're going to be looking for a lot. As it gets closer, these other teams could be, if they make the trades now, teams still have enough time and still enough players available in free agency to plug some holes if they have to give up a lot to get people. So there's still a chance to pick up some people on free agency. If you wait till closer to the draft, more and more people are, it's starting to slow down big time.
Yeah.
People are going to start to get signed. There's going to be more people signed. The free agent pool is going to dry up a little bit. You don't want to give up, if you're the Cardinals, you don't want to get too little in return. And if you're one of these other teams, you don't want to give up too much too soon. But, something's got to give. If this trade is going to happen, I say it happens at least a week before the draft. I don't think it's going
to
be a draft night trade.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get any more by holding out to the last minute. They got to make a move. They already know who they want. I don't think it's any question in my mind right now that they want Kyler Murray. I don't think it's any question in my mind. I don't know if they're just waiting out the Giants and the Redskins and the Dolphins to see who will up the ante. Like I said, if I'm the Giants, I got 12, 13 picks. I will barter two of those picks to get him. I don't know if the Dolphins and the Redskins have that luxury. I don't know the draft situation at this point.
The Redskins don't have much in the way of cap space.
Right, he's not making a ton of money, but you're right. They'd have to find room, and they just brought over Case Keenum. So, that's an interesting situation now. So, if I'm Rosen wanted to go to the Giants from the beginning. He wanted the Giants. He made it clear he wants to play in New York. He would have went to the Jets, I'm sure, but he wants to be in New York. So I think it's going to happen, to be honest. I think he's going to happen. He's going to be traded. Where he goes, he could easily wind up in Miami. Miami has probably the worst quarterback situation right now.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, so I think at this point, we'll see how it plays out, but I'm looking forward to the draft, and hopefully we'll be sitting side by side somewhere, whether it's here or in the studios or we're down in a bar somewhere.
We're definitely going to be together for the draft. That's a given. It's just a matter of where it is. Don't you worry about that. I give you my word. Yep. With that, we have to be, because we got to watch it on the TV together so that we can comment. It makes it so much easier.
Sure.
For a show like that, we got to be there at the same place at the same time.
I would agree with you, Jeff. So, but listen, I'm going to bring this one to a close. Unless there's something you want to jam in, I'm going to hold off. I got a bunch of stuff. We'll bring it till next week. I'm just I'm fighting it now, and I'm starting to drift on you a little bit. So we got a good hour.
No, so we had a long night, a long day yesterday, and we'll wrap it up now. It was kind of due to the concert and the hectic week. The show wasn't as prepared as it normally is, but that's understandable. And if you're shot, you got to do what you got to do. But we brought up a few good topics tonight, so I'm satisfied.
Yeah, we got to a couple of good ones, and next week is going to be a really good show. We're going to do a mock draft. I got a bunch of baseball stuff, a bunch of football stuff that I didn't get to, which is timeless. We can do it any week, so we'll get back to it. We'll get more baseball going now. We got Yankees, Mets. Everybody won today, so we'll have some fun. Maybe we'll get Jeff to start pay attention to a little more baseball this year. But right now we got draft coming up, so we'll be full steam ahead on that. But guys, make sure you check us out every Thursday night on Hard Rocket Sports, 6:30 to 9:30 normally, here at the Hard Rocket Sports channels. Wednesday nights, Pass the Mic Show. And listen, by the way, happy anniversary to Mike Passamonte and Carl. I believe today is officially 1 year that they've been on the Hard Rocket Sports channels. And the show's gotten better and better and better every week. And I congratulate them, and I thank them for being part of our family here. And look forward to it. Guys, also, RFL Records, a little announcement. Today was the official announcement of the signing of the band Love and Revenge. You get a chance. Look up Love and Revenge. If you like old school hair metal, these guys are it. They are playing a show in June with L.A. Guns on the Whiskey out in L.A., and they will be making some festival announcements, and they're going to be making a run, I believe, possibly with 6 a.m., Nikki Sixx's band, but I can't announce any of that stuff for sure yet. I don't have any specifics to it, so make sure you guys come on back. But a big congrats to those guys.
You know, one thing that there's another anniversary that you totally forgot about.
Which is?
Well, it's about 1 year ago, around this time, that the Half Man disappeared.
Yes, yes. Well, it'll officially be end of April, yes, right? On the draft day, the Half Man went into some sort of hibernation and disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know exactly what happened. We don't have verification of where he went.
Yep.
But we do know that he went.
Half Man was disappeared, and right now he's disappeared again. I haven't heard from him all week. He has not reached out. He did not call in tonight. He did not ask to call in. So the Half Man has not fulfilled his obligation from Jeff's of appearing on the show 5 straight weeks to earn his halftime with the Half Man status back. So he has to either start all over, or maybe Jeff has to meet out some other form of punishment for Dom to regain his status here on the show.
I don't think that any punishment at this point in time is worthy of the Half Man, other than to say, no, he will from now on be known as Dom from Staten Island.
Okay, then it's official. No matter what role he plays on this show going forward until Jeff decrees otherwise, he is Dom from Staten Island, and so be it.
Yeah, he has to be, man, because it's just a shame. I mean, he was a man on the rise. He had his own segment, and then he just let it crash and burn. And whatever it is that he's doing, he's certainly not growing, at least not in height. maybe in width, maybe growing it. And we understand that things do happen in people's lives, but what is a text or a phone call, Dom, if you're listening? We're very disappointed.
Very disappointed, but, well, he will no longer refer to anything other than as Dom from Staten Island. Please call in next week, and we will continue our assault of your character, which is very light anyway. But, guys, like I said, come on back next Thursday night. We'll have a full show. We'll be back at it. We'll be after our first practice with our new band. We'll see how that all works out. We'll give you a little something on that. Looking forward to Tuesday night. But I'm really looking forward to next Thursday night when Jeff and I get behind the mics again and talk to you for 3 hours plus about the biggest news and topics around the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and sports. So, guys, I hope you have a great weekend. But, Jeff, there's only one way we can actually close up a Hard Rock and Sports show. And you know what that is?
Yes, sirree, Bobby.
Stage is that moose, you know. And
so when you're playing, you feel like a preserved moose on stage.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, so for Jeff Towinski, Nick Marino, myself, and everybody here at Hard Rock and Sports, I say thank you for listening. Thanks for paying attention. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be beautiful weather on Saturday, maybe even on Sunday. Stay safe. Have some fun. And come on back to Hard Rock and Sports next Thursday night, 6:30 to 9:30, right here at the Hard Rock and Sports channel. Have a great
night. Can I just
add
to that goodbye real quick?
Sure.
Well, we'll do a special thanks from the Hard Rock and Sports show, from Tommy, myself, Big Sexy, Nick Marino, and Dom from Staten Island.
There you go. Nice.
He has to be known as Dom from Staten Island, man. At all costs.
I'm going to change it on the website, hardrockandsports.com. He will no longer be known as Dominic Ginta. It will be changed to Dom from Staten Island. So if you check the website tomorrow, you will see a little blurb under his picture that says Dom from Staten Island. So make sure you guys check us out, hardrockandsports.com. And have a great weekend and a good, safe week. We'll see you back here next Thursday night. And have some fun. Jefe, I will speak to you tomorrow, the next day. We can make sure we line up everybody for Tuesday. And I'll get to see you once a week for the next few weeks, hopefully.
Yep, there you go, man. And go get some sleep, man. You sounded tired.
I'm headed that way right now, my friend. All right, everybody. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Jeff.
Later, man.